Going into 2 hours of that favored Thursday night show, Bothrop Spears Broadside, Civil Rights for the Poor here in Santa Cruz. Tonight we have a special semi-anonymous guest who's going to give us some of the inside dope on what it's like to be on the beat.
A letter saying I love you on it, and that I placed on a table at the library, and as she walked by she read this note and then mysteriously thought I put it there for her. Now, with all the information that was put out on the public, anything that I was even accused of, I was all of a sudden guilty of. So this little letter that I put it there saying I love you or whatever, she's like 12 or something, and you know, she had friends around, all this stuff, but supposedly I wrote it to her. And you know, I just said no, but I wrote the letter. I didn't deny writing the letter. I wrote the letter to somebody that I had been flirting with consistently. And, you know, they didn't...
An older person.
She was 18 or older. But then the third count was, I believe it was the girl that I had been surfing friends with. And then they got two different counts because I had given her a hug on two different occasions. And she never, in the police report, they never said there was any sexual content or anything. She just thought it was friendly but weird. And I gave her a hug, and like I say, we had gotten to be friends, so it wasn't like I was hugging somebody that didn't know me. During trial, she admitted she would never have denied it or refused it, because we did have this friendship. She said that it happened at the Billy Bond contest, where there's thousands of people around the lighthouse and watching the surfers. So it wasn't like some isolated thing where I tried to rustle her off somewhere, but they made it look that way.
DA was in charge of the case.
Michael Bartram, who I maybe shouldn't even talk about that, but I do have civil action against Michael Bartram for releasing the stories to the newspaper. And then I do have action against the public defender's office also, and one of the people that complained, the father at the pet store, I filed action against him for slander and defamation of character. And I'm getting
civil suits, right?
Civil suits, and I'm finding that I'm getting railroaded on the civil suits, too.
You don't have an attorney, do you?
I can't get an attorney in this town.
What happened when you tried one?
I contacted lawyer referral. They told me to go down and apply for the money from some organization in town.
Legal aid.
And after I got the money, I contacted them and said, well, where should I go? And they said, well, we've been in contact with every lawyer in town that could represent you, but said that they couldn't, because now with your lawsuit stemming from the district attorney's office to the public defender's office, there's a conflict with every attorney in town. So I'm stuck trying to ask advice.
That's your part of the establishment. They don't want to buck the establishment. In the most naked form is this this often stated cliche seems to be true. The legal aid, I should say, the attorney referral said to you that every single attorney in town would not take the civil action. So they're saying that no attorney locally would take a civil action against the public defender's office.
That's what they said, and I submitted that.
You can't believe that every attorney is involved in the public defender's office. That's strange.
Well, it is strange, but you know, when you don't have any money, you got to rely on the legal aid. And when you got the legal aid and the lawyer referral, they only send you to specific lawyers that handle that type of a lawsuit.
Sean Gallagher.
Well, he's a criminal defense attorney, so he doesn't do civil law. And he's a very good criminal attorney. You know, I told him, you know, I don't understand why so many people in Santa Cruz take plea bargaining. Because going through the trial is what America's all about. You know, I was totally disappointed with the idea that the jury, you know, you can imagine, that I was found guilty by the jury. Though, there's so many issues in my appeal that I think because the judge overstretched his authority by giving them certain evidence that was never supposed to have been seen, by denying me a lawyer, certain elements that, well, that's basically prejudiced the jury. And so now I'm like stuck trying to fight my way back out of it.
Talk to the jury after this?
You know, after they had said you're guilty of three of the counts, they asked, or I should say, Barracuda Barton asked if you'd like to poll the jury. And I was in such depression. I don't know. You know, know, somebody that had been coming to the trials, a friend. He said that out in the alley, they asked the bailiff if they could please tell me. The jury had asked the bailiff that they could come in and say why they found me. I guess they seen it in my face that I was like slapped with a rock, you know.
Did you get to hear that from any of you?
Never did, Dylan. They kept me in there. They took me back over to county jail. I'd been in a couple of fights in the county jail, and they put me in the hole. You know, there is a lot of harassment that goes on with a person in prison for sex crime. You can't feel comfortable. The police will give you up. The guards will give you up. The inmates give you up, you know. So you basically got to walk around with a chosen few and watch them out. Only one assault, and I was very lucky, you know. It was like really quick, it was over with. At the end, it was like we were both on report for a fight, and they had asked me, well, do you want to go home? And I said, yeah, I'll get there, and then get out of here. It was 3 months before the thing that happened in the pet store. I took the plea bargain. They told me it'll only be a child annoyance charge. And I figured, well, a child annoyance charge is nothing because it, you know, she was annoyed, I guess, when she seen the thing in my pants. But they never did tell me that it would be different kind of things. In fact, I made a little note to try to keep my thoughts in line. There's something that the public defender has called Cal Jinks, and this Cal Jinks book describes crimes. You won't even get to see it. They kind of keep it from the public, and when they give you a plea bargain, they'll tell you something silly like, oh, it's only an annoyance charge. But when you read the whole charge and understand that the thing you're pleading guilty to is having an abnormal sexual interest with some child or something, then you can understand this hysteria that's going on, you know. But the public defenders don't even explain that to you. They just say, oh, it's an annoyance charge. Oh, okay, well, I guess they were annoyed. And then you find yourself under the water, you know what I mean? You're drowning and you're asking for help, and nobody does give you help because at that point, it's too late.
Well, do you regard yourself as a sexual offender?
No, I don't. And now I'm trying to sue that public defender who told me it was only going to be an annoyance charge.
We have an incoming call here. Let's see what the great public thinks.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, I didn't realize you were live, but I just like to say I'm really glad that you're looking into the situation with the DA's office. We've really had no people's DA for a long, long time, and now with that vacancy coming up, you hear these horror stories that I've been hearing for so long. At this time, I think it's really important. You're doing a great job.
Yeah, well, we're lucky to have Bill here in the studio.
Yeah.
Is there any questions you have for Bill, or?
It's like, you know, breaking my heart. I'm really sorry to hear he's going through this shit. But, you know, I hear this kind of stuff so much. There's something wrong with the DA, really something wrong with the DA's office. They're really sick.
Are you telling me, caller, that you've heard of similar false charges of sexual molestation or sexual...
Yes, yeah, sure. They'll use whatever they can, whatever they want, just to run their process, their business, whatever it is they're doing there. It ain't right, whatever they're doing. They don't care what they use. They don't care who they abuse, and they don't care about anybody's rights or knowledge or information. It's a sad state. The DA's office is really a real crisis in this city, this county.
What do you suggest we do about this, caller?
Well, January 12th, the Board of Supervisors is meeting, and they'll be picking a new DA pro tem. And if ever the public should speak out, it should be probably at that 9 o'clock open mic. I think everybody should show up and let them know, hey, you know, we're all tired of this crap. This crap's bad. Get it out of town.
Well, what do you think of the chosen appointee is Kate Canales. What do you think of her calling?
I don't know the woman personally, you know, but I wouldn't trust any DA in a dark alley.
Let me ask Bill what he has to say.
I mean, they're lying. They're lying, cheating. You know, not, they're not looking at police abuse or sheriff abuse. They don't do anything. You know, and hey, what is this? She's going to become DA by some political maneuver? What the fuck is that all about? What's that all about? Hey, you know, this is a democracy, you know, and those are civil servants. They ought to behave.
Well, caller, let me get our guest a reaction from our guest. Bill, any have you been following the DA's race in the papers?
Yeah, in fact, I was looking at the Metro the other night, and it talked a little bit about Art Danner and how he was trying to be appointed. Now he is appointed, and that this woman was going to take his place, but it wasn't really drawing a very good picture of her, like... She's somebody that's just going to fill in his shoes instead of somebody that's going to represent the city of Santa Cruz.
Can you hear that, caller?
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's just a political maneuver. You know, they kicked Judge Attic up to Superior Court. That man's a Nazi. I mean, he's a racist. He should not be a judge. So, you know, Governor Wilson's having his big last fling at us. You know, he hasn't screwed the poor people enough. He wants to make sure he puts all the real bigots and hate mongers and false crime processors in power as he can before he leaves. It's all part of that manipulation. I think it's disgusting.
Well,
thanks for having him on the show. I'm going to keep listening.
Thanks, caller.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, it sounds like somebody out there doesn't intend to turn you away from his doorstep. What's been happening with you in the community? Have you been getting a lot of people saying, "Oh, here comes that child molester. Look out, little Janie. Don't let him near you." Or,
well, in all respect, I haven't had that much of a problem, but I haven't been going at all where I used to go. In I've been going to mental health because I'm just so. Like traumatized by the whole thing. You know, if there's a chance I could read some of the stuff that they put in the newspaper about me, and maybe you can understand where my fear lies, because of you know, I'm trying to sue for slander, though I don't think that the district attorney's office or anyone else in this court system wants to recognize what they put. It says here, sex offender arrested. A registered sex offender will be arraigned Monday for violating his probation by approaching a 12-year-old girl on the west side. Authorities said Bill, 41, who has two prior misdemeanor convictions of indecent exposure and child molestation, that's what I was talking about.
Two priors.
Yeah, it was like all these priors. I'm sitting there going, wait a minute, I got the police printouts. I can show people that I had no child molestation conviction. But, you know, even the newspaper that printed this refused to talk to me.
We're talking about the Santa Cruz Sentinel.
That's exactly right. I wrote them a letter. They never responded. After all this, I got involved looking at the law in the book, and I understand to sue a publication is just so hard because of the freedom of press, and you got to follow every little niche and obstacle to get anything done, and then I thought that it said right down on the bottom, this is all, you know, said by Deputy District Attorney Michael Bartram. Isn't it funny that the guy that's prosecuting me in the courtroom is prosecuting me in the public? You know, this just killed whatever chance I had in the trial. If I had subpoenaed about 20 people. And after about, I don't know, about 8 people showed up voluntarily to testify at the trial, another 10 were supposed to still show up, and a lot of them weren't. It was like the judge said, if you don't have another witness in here in 5 minutes, you're going to have to close your side of the case. And I'm sitting there going, Your Honor, I'm having problems. And you knew I was going to have problems. I think we could have like a little recess or something. No. And he closed the side of the case, and then more witnesses came in the room, but it was too late. I had to close my side of the case.
Another basis for your appeal?
Well, I tried to get that in, but the attorney that's working on my appeal, Alex Green, up in Berkeley, real good attorney, he says that the best argument in the thing is the denial of an attorney. And then there was other facets that I had asked him for a mental evaluation because of the depression history in the past, and then going through trial where I fall apart and start crying. It's like, you know, wait a minute, the judge, when he seen you falling apart in that courtroom, should have at that point said, wait a minute, we need to get this man some legal representation. He's no longer able. And I wasn't able from the beginning, but it didn't matter. Once this train started rolling, it wasn't like they were even giving me a chance to speak, you know. Being in jail and having all this stuff on the press, you're silenced. I felt like a political prisoner, and I've never felt like one. But if I was like in a Nazi prison camp somewhere or something, I think I would have felt about how they felt. They couldn't say nothing. They couldn't do nothing. These people, I tried calling friends, and because of the articles in the paper, the friends called the district attorney's office, said, we don't want them calling here no more. And then I couldn't even call. I couldn't call friends that I had had because of what this did in my life, you know.
So these were false statements in the Santa Cruz Sentinel.
Yeah, these were false statements, and like I say, I wrote to them saying, hey, you've printed stuff that isn't even true. I've got the printouts over here of all my past history. I can, you know, this story about me approaching somebody in the pet store. What, is it approaching somebody when you ask them if they have a hamster in a cage? It's in the transcript, you know what I mean? There's no arguing. That's all I said.
You were on probation for this previous offense?
For indecent exposure, yeah. Well, wait a minute. This is kind of an off-the-wall thing. It gets a little deep because what had happened was on 7th Avenue Beach, this person said they seen something hanging down my pant leg or whatever, but it was indecent exposure. Then the attorney at the time, John J. Hamlin, who has a civil action going against him, he came up to me saying, well, you know, you're going to do jail time over this. And I'm going, no, I ain't going to do no jail. I took a friend with me to court that day. He goes, after a hearing in front of Judge Kelsey, where it was denied, they said, oh, no, you know, we understand a crime had been committed. John Hamlin goes, come on, we're going to go over to the jail. We're going to find out if you get work release. I'm going, I'm not going to jail. And he's going, well, come on. And so he drags me and this friend with me over to the county jail where I'm like freaking out. I'm going, no, I'm going to jail. And at that point he goes, well, you won't have to go to jail if you do the plea bargain for this annoyance charge. And I'm going, well, I don't want to do any jail. You know, what are you talking about? And he's going, oh, it's nothing, you know. But it turned out being a prior, and having a prior.
Now, would this, did your probation department tell you that any conversation, were you not allowed to have any conversations with young people at all? What were the conditions of your
probation? That. I've got the transcripts from right here with me right now from the hearing in front of Judge Acow. And Judge Acow impressed on me a regulation that said absolutely no direct contact with anyone under the age of 14. And, you know, I'm a layman. I don't understand anything outside of a direct contact, meaning, well, you don't go up and give nobody a hug, or, you know. So to me, saying hi, or is there any hamsters in the cage, I found myself going, no, I didn't violate probation. I didn't have no contact. But when I went in front of Judge Salazar goes, my God, you know, just saying that, you know, and then he took the father's story about me following around in his pet store, and I don't know if anybody's ever been to this pet store. There's only two aisleways. One side goes right by the counter, the other one goes by some fish tanks, and you can't see from either side of this thing. And I had no idea where this kid was in this pet store, and then when I finally see her there, I go, is there any hamsters? So anyway, what I'm trying to say is the judge violated me for the talking to the kid and being in the pet store, saying that was a violation also.
And so It looks like they dug up all the stuff after the first charge kind of fell through. Was that the story, the charge about, what was the original charge?
Indecent exposure.
The annoyance after the indecent exposure.
Yeah, they dug up the annoyance charge. They said that the conditions of that probation were that you weren't supposed to have any contact. I interpret.
Wasn't there another charge that we spoke of when we first got on the air? I'm trying to remember it. The original charge after the indecent exposure. You, in this most recent round, there was a series of there was a
annoy or molest.
Right, but that was what was the original? Not the pet store one. Was it the library one we were talking about? Maybe it was the library one. In any case, you point out the charge fell through.
Oh, I was acquitted.
You were acquitted. I'll try you on it anyway.
Oh, yeah. They violated me on probation for saying hi to the girl in the pet store, but then they
went to jail. You were in jail then throughout the course of the trial?
They violated me, kept me in court for 10 months, charged me with the exact same charge, and ran me through a trial with that as one of the charges. So that in turn was a charge of annoyance.
Did that charge stick?
No. When the jury heard the inconsistencies in the trial, I didn't do a good job.
What were the charges that stuck?
Oh, the hugging this friend of mine that surfed with me, and part of that was probably because, and this got a little touchy right here. One day when I was walking down West Cliff Drive, she yells to me, "Hey Bill, I got a cut on my foot." And I go, "God, you should put on some booties or something, you know." She goes, "I ain't got booties." So I go, "Well, why don't you put a rubber on your foot?" And she said something, she looked a little shocked that I said it. And somebody yelled to me, "Well, that will never fit." And I jokingly said, "Oh, I got extra large." Well, that turned out being her testimony in the courtroom of, "Oh, he told me he had extra large." Nothing about the cut on the foot, nothing about that it wouldn't fit, only that I'm like running around telling everybody I got a big slong, So, to me, this is like witness tampering or coaching witnesses, I don't believe it's right. I don't think it's just. When you're dealing with a guy that has a history of mental illness, as I do, with depression, anxiety, to unleash this kind of vengeance over something that was never sexual. Nothing I did.
So you were convicted on this count?
Yeah, those two counts. Two hugs with Rebecca Davis. Sorry. And one count that this note I put on this table that said, "I love you," turned into another count.
And how much time are you facing in jail if you violate your parole now?
Probably life. I don't have an idea. The public attitude toward this type of a crime is just lock people up. And I think the DA would run with it, I'm totally panicked by...
We're talking to Bill, who has a civil lawsuit against both the public defender's office. Do you also have a lawsuit against the DA's office? I'm not too sure.
Yeah, I do. But they, not knowing what I'm doing, they put in a motion for demurrer, which I had no idea what it is, so I could never put an argument out because I don't know what to argue. And at the hearing, Judge Yonitz told me, "Well,
let me move on from this for a moment because these details are, although they're important, they require really a deeper knowledge of this whole scene." And what I'd like to do now is give the callers, if you're out there, a chance to join this discussion. This is really a touchy subject. It's not a touchy subject to me. Judicial abuse and DA abuse and public defender abuse in Santa Cruz. It is a touchy subject when we start talking about sexual, sexual molestation of a minor, things of this sort. I mean, I hug a lot of people myself. I would say I hug about 15 or 20 people a day. And who knows, a couple of maybe minors. Check it out, Art Dinner or Kate Canlis. So, I don't know. I mean, this brand of a sexual offender being put upon a person for life is a serious sort of thing. And, of course, we'll no doubt have to consider the other side of this argument, which is that there are people who are sexual offenders, and they do involve minors in abusive contacts, and that is another thing that happens. What's your sense of that? I mean, do you think are the laws appropriate, are the laws inappropriate, or do you have just prosecutors who have gone crazy? Is there any legitimate place for laws regarding sexual misconduct with a minor?
Well, having spent like 20 months in prison and jail with people, I sincerely think that they need to have a mental facility set up for people.
Did you meet people who were actually sexual molestation people who really were, in your mind, fairly convicted and who had hurt minors through their contact?
Yeah, I met them. And I really think instead of prisons, though, where I don't think anyone gets better, I think they need medical help, medical treatment, therapy, something, because just locking somebody in a cage doesn't help anybody. And in fact, what I've seen, and I've seen quite a few very young people in the prison, they come in, they start talking the homie stuff and dog this and all that other stuff, and when they get out, they're going to be worse. And then when they come back, they're going to get worse. So, you know, I think the whole prison thing, ever since the Bible was written and they talked about putting in people in prison 2,000 years ago, it hasn't done nothing to help nobody. And you'd think as people with brains, we'd be able to analyze what's happening here about imprisoning people, and it continues to decay the society. You'd start doing something with rehabilitation and hospitalization instead of just housing them.
Yeah. What about you? Have you been spent any time in psych wards or hospitals? Do you have any in your life?
I've tried suicide a couple of times. I tried suicide after this this last incident, and I've never been hospitalized. I've been given Zoloft, and I didn't care for the antidepressant medicine. It made me so I couldn't sleep at night. And I've went to do therapy where, you know, they try to deal with some issues of childhood and get these things on with me. And I'm all in favor of therapy. I
has it helped you at all?
Yeah, yeah. One-on-one therapy is probably the best. Group therapy, I don't know. I think there's just too much performing going on in a group. I like the idea of when you open up to somebody, it's the person you're talking with.
Well, Bill, we're going to, at least we're going to kind of move on to another segment of the show here, although we'll come back to you in a bit, because I know you may have some more stuff you want to discuss, but we try to throw a lot of different things into the show. We have been at this for 45 minutes. You are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. In Santa Cruz, and our call-in phone line is 427-3772, our voicemail. If you want to help Free Radio Santa Cruz, either with a donation or with a public service announcement, or if we can help you, give a call to 427-4523. Looks like somebody is giving a call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, Robert. Hi, guest.
Guest, can you hear, Bill, can you hear our caller?
Yeah, I can now.
I think I recognize the voice of this caller, but this must be Bob. Are we talking to Bob LaMonica?
You certainly are. Your guest simply has not adjusted to his role as an expendable. All right, now there was a celebrated case back in North Carolina, I believe, in the 80s, where a child care provider was accused of child molestation and all the co-workers, and it was exposed much later in the 90s that it was a fraud, that the children were entrapped into making false statements.
So there's also the McMartin case in Los Angeles.
Exactly. Okay, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And the outcome in terms of the prosecutorial zeal was nil. Nothing happens. The fact of the matter is that, yes, things happen, all right? There is child molestation. There are heinous crimes. But the fact of the matter also is that there are false crimes. There are false allegations. There are false charges.
Indeed.
All right, now I wanted to bring up some situations regarding Judge Danner.
Judge Danner. Boy,
yes.
It's frightening to hear that.
All right, which are inescapably documented and true.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, Danner uses position to evade felony drunk driving charges. I'm going to repeat that. Danner uses position to evade felony drunk driving charges.
Mm-hmm.
This is indisputable. This
Give us the date and
June 9th, 1987.
Mm-hmm.
Art Danner is coming out of a meeting at the Holiday Inn with representatives from Honeywell Corporation. He had been drinking gin and tonics. He pulls out onto Ocean Avenue. He turns in onto oncoming traffic and hits Sandra Larson head-on. Sandra Larson has 4 broken teeth, among other injuries. Who gets the blood test? It's not the at-fault drinking driver. Now, if this case had gone down the correct way, Art Danner, DA, in 1987, would have faced felony drunk driving charges.
But it's so hard to prosecute yourself.
Absolutely. So what happens in this case? Now, let's follow this through. Sandra Larson, the victim, is taken to the hospital. She's given a field sobriety test on a gurney in the hospital. She's given a blood test. Her blood has run through all the tests. And lucky for Sandra Larson, it comes up negative. Now the fact, the FACT is, Danner used his position to evade felony drunk driving charges. We're talking about the DA here with the power to prosecute, and now Judge Danner. June 9th, 1987. Highly documented. Inescapable fact. Number two, Danner falsifies time cards for election hush money payoff. I want to repeat that. Danner falsifies time cards for election hush money payoff. Inescapable, highly documented fact. From March 18th through July 24th of 1994, Assistant District Attorney Catherine Gardner has paid nearly $40,000 to sit at home. Danner's fifth term election is June 7th, 1994. What was the motive? Now, Catherine Gardner had come to her boss earlier in the year claiming that she had been snorting coke under duress from an abusive boyfriend. So, the DA has her time cards falsified, overlapping the election for 17 weeks. Catherine Gardner is paid to sit at home. Highly documented fact. Danner falsifies time cards for election hush money payoff. There's no way around that statement. Now, the Board of Supervisors, in their infinite lack of wisdom and courage, because what are they there for? What's the Board of Supervisors' key purpose? It's to recognize and respond to abuse of power. A year later, Resolution number 11495 is passed by the Board of Supervisors on April 4th, 95, which exonerates Danner from this obvious misconduct. And why? Because we don't know how to deal with these kinds of things. We'd rather slough them off. They don't happen here, yada, yada. The fact of the matter is they do happen here. And there's a long and winding trail of expendable victims to the DA's office zeal to make quota and to avoid dealing with common practices of not being involved in double standards. So apparently the DA can falsify time cards and we'll just slough it off.
That's how they handle it here.
Number three, Danner remains mute about Santa Cruz County murder and farce prosecution. This is a very interesting case. Danner remains mute about Santa Cruz County murder and farce prosecution. Corrine Christensen is murdered. Her face is blown off. November 2nd, 1986, in her Live Oak apartment. Two guys are in the room with her. James Marino and Richard Bandler. They wait 36 hours before they report the crime. Marino throws the murder weapon over the Capitola Pier. And the reason why we know that is that Marino was given immunity for drug charges only, and I underline only, Marino is given immunity for drug charges only for his testimony. And he shows the Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Department where the murder weapon is. So what happens? Bandler is tried. First degree murder. Bandler is found not guilty. Marino is never prosecuted. They both walk. The case is closed. I'll add one other thing here. The preliminary hearing trial minutes are reported missing July 30th, 1987. They're replaced.
97, you mean?
87.
87.
They're replaced by the DA's office so-called copies. And lo and behold, because I've been into the Bandler file, lo and behold, 3 years later, on August 20th, 1990, there's a 3x5 card that says the originals are found, and they're in a storage locker at Bluebird Storage. And I've seen the so-called original preliminary hearing trial minutes. This case is an absolute farce. Our Danner never makes a public statement during or after. So, apparently nobody murdered Corrine Christensen. Now, these guys are both guilty of something. They're both accessories.
What do you think was the motivation of Danner? Was he directly involved in this case, or was there some other DA prosecuting?
It was an imported DA who had never done a murder trial named Gary Fry, who was appointed by Danner to do the case. Now, let's get this straight. Who does the cases that go to trial, or who does the prosecuting, the assistant DAs? They're appointed. So they appoint this no murder trial experience Gary Fry, prosecute. And the whole trial is an absolute farce and a joke. The point being, we're going to spin doctor this thing until it goes away. So apparently, if it's the right person with the right connections, you can get away with murder in Santa Cruz County.
Indeed.
All right, last example. Danner accepts bribe to prosecute trade secrets case. And I'm going to repeat that. Danner accepts bribe, B-R-I-B-E, to prosecute trade secrets case. Now, this is the Borland case, and this is in the the early 90s, 1992. And, in fact, Kate Canlis is the lead prosecutor in this case. The DA's office accepts $13,000 from Borland to prosecute this trade secrets case. All right. And, in fact, as a side note, the key investigator, Jonathan Rivers, goes to work for Borland days after the grand jury hands down favorable indictments. I want to read a couple of quotes. This is from 9-8-93 in the Santa Cruz Sentinel. Quote, if the district attorney continues with the this prosecution, it will be on trial, Kelsey said, Judge Kelsey. And Mr. Danner, quote, we agreed the judge was wrong, Danner said Tuesday. And one final quote from acting DA Kate Canlis, who was the lead prosecutor. And this is from the Sentinel, August 24th, 93. Quote, Kate Canlis, quote, he made me feel like I've done something wrong, end quote, said Assistant District Attorney Kate Canlis, excuse me, who argued the DA's case. Quote, I've done it before and I will probably do it again, end quote, referring to the practice of accepting help from victims, says the Sentinel. So apparently it's okay to take bribe money in Santa Cruz County under the proper circumstances. So this is some of the highly documented irregularities that exist, and how many people that we'll probably never hear about who are intimidated and who want to get on with their lives and choose to put things behind them that they know are wrong.
Caller, thank you. Maybe we can get a couple of reactions from our guests. Do you want to stay on for that, caller?
Absolutely. Okay. It's a very interesting story from your guest, and I'm sure he's not the only one in which a situation like this has occurred with overzealous prosecutors. However, it needs to be said that these crimes do occur, but there is absolutely no question that false charges happen and that prosecution of false charges happen. The bottom line is that there's no accountability, zero accountability, with the lives that are destroyed, the expendability factor, the lives that are destroyed by prosecutors in the 20-year Danner DA office. It's an absolute scandal. I want to repeat those four statements that I made, and then I'll get off the air, Robert, and thank you for the time.
Okay.
Danner uses position to evade felony drunk driving charges. Danner falsifies time cards for election hush money payoff. Danner remains mute about Santa Cruz County murder and farce prosecution. And finally, Danner accepts bribe to prosecute trade secrets case. Thank you very much.
Thank you, caller.
All right.
Well, Bill, any comments on our caller who actually has led a recall? I think he's led a number of recalls against Art Danner, unsuccessful but educational certainly, and I've never heard an adequate response to any of these facts that the caller has brought up.
Yeah, I believe you won't get any facts either. You know, before I came over here, I wanted to write a list of things to talk about, and one of them is prosecution due to overzealous DA. It seems to me, having been in the county jail for 10 months and up in San Quentin, it was like everybody that I'd heard in there, you know, we're not talking about crimes. Some of these crimes were ridiculous crimes to be prosecuted for, and then others were very serious, but I met some people in jail. I just couldn't believe the taxpayers were actually behind this, you know. I wrote a little thing down in one of my things, who really is representing this county, you know. If you look at Art Danner and his, you know, prosecute everything, then maybe you need to find out how much money this county gets from subsidized prosecutions and convictions and how much money we get for sending people to Santa Rita. And, you know, it's a lot more than just our Danner either. When I was up in San Quentin, I wrote the grand jury because I had heard that you can start an investigation through them, you know, and I mentioned that the man had printed all this stuff in the newspaper without having any proof, without having any credibility, but the grand jury just shunned their back on what I wrote them. They said, oh, well, absolutely, he did what he had to do or whatever, you know, but hey, you know, I'm the one sitting up there in San Quentin, he's the one retired now, you know. Then I got out, and their arguments were that I never did a tort. Well, you know, I'm not no lawyer. I don't understand certain things, but I had filed a complaint with the county, and I figured that was enough. Later, when I did file the tort with the county, it was shot down, but now I'm finding out they would shoot anything down if it stems against prosecuting the district attorney's office, because they have carte blanche in this town. And that's a little frightening. Anyway, it is to anybody that's concerned about a civilization, you know.
Yeah, definitely, Bill. And I'm glad that you haven't let your own injuries, because I'm sure that this is tremendously stressful and injurious to your own well-being, your own life has been torn apart by this. Stop you. Perhaps in a way, it's giving you a perspective where you get a broader view because you've seen many other people and the cases of many other people you've run into, and you get a sense of what's really going on. It's, of course, it's a bad way to learn about it, no doubt, but you have learned about it, and now you're communicating to us about it.
Yeah, and, you know, I just wanted to point out, you know, the idea that a public defender is going to try to come into a courtroom and represent a person that he's been appointed to when he's got like 20 to 30 other clients, he's overworked because every case is prosecuted by the district attorney's office. So it's a manipulation kind of. A DA overburdens the public defender to a place where he can't even defend a person. So then they start this plea bargain snow train going, and by the time the public defender even gets in touch with you, he's already talked to the DA. He knows what they're going to go for. He comes at you with a deal. He kind of like coerces you and gets you into a feeling of duress because you're locked up or whatever. And when you shut off that plea bargain thing, even he's kind of against you. I seen more and more of that as I sat in jail. People coming out of a trial and finding out, they said, you know, my public defender never even called one character witness for me. And I thought, Not a single character witness. This is your life, you know, a public defender that wouldn't even try.
Yeah, well, I've often found DAs, I mean, public defenders putting together their case in the 5 minutes before the trial. I mean, it's really grotesque. And I know they're horrible in activist cases. They just, you know, they attempt to exclude activists from the defense. They, you know, pressure you, high pressure you to take deals, to take probation. Stuff that I, of course, would myself generally not do. It's a nasty scene. It's a nasty scene entirely, and I'm glad you've given us a little bit of the dirty laundry here of the public defenders and the district attorney's office. We've been talking to Bill here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 427-3772. He's gotten the deep shaft from the DA's office and, of course, from the whole judicial system for what he describes as essentially innocent behavior, and is now branded for life as a sex offender. Again, I can't comment on this other than what I've heard. And, of course, I've only heard Bill's side of it. But, you know, I tend to take him at his word. And the thing kind of frightens me. I'm going to turn now, however, to a little music, and then we're going to hit the streets again with some other folks who are getting harassed out there. A lot of folks are. And stay with us and call in with us on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 427-3772.
Well, they're putting up condos all over town. Acres of condos bringing me down. Tiny little condos, no parking, no. The condos are empty, the shelters are full. Oh, let's quad condos. Chevron and Mobile and Shell Oil did great, putting gas stations on prime real estate. Who buy land that's poison? Well, I'll tell you who. The rich to build condos, to try